KPPPLP Fargo Moorhead 88.1 FM. This is Nemo Cicados, and I hope we're finding you and finding me at KPPPLP Fargo Moorhead 88.1 FM, where we are adding local queer color to your airwaves. Tune in to listen at 5 p.m. on the first Wednesday of the month for new content with replays at the same time every Wednesday on the radio on 88.1 FM and at our website at kpppfm.com for the podcast. We have live stream Facebook etiquette. Please refer to KPPPLP Fargo Moorhead's Facebook comment rules. Links are available as a Facebook note on our page and as a PDF. Be a good audience, don't harass the host, technician, moderator, or other audience members, or the moderator will enforce the rules and ban you. Links will be dropped into the comments, or just open a new tab in your browser, if you can, and take a look so you don't get banned from commenting. If you want to comment on the show or have an interview arranged with me, you can contact us at 701-566-0917, at Nemo Potatoes on Facebook, Instagram, or Twitter. Contact me at kppfm.com/fighting-me and hit the contact tab or email me at nemo@kppfm.com. Follow us on Facebook at 88.1 FM Fargo Moorhead, The People's Press Project, and Mexi-Can. Donations to Fargo Moorhead's low-power, commercial-free radio station can be made at our website on kppfm.com/donate and check out our underwriting opportunities at kppfm.com/underwriting-opportunities on how you can support the first queer radio program in the Red River Valley. So last month, we interviewed Brad Kilmer and his ideas on music, and I just kind of wanted to close up with the healing harmony theme and how music affects us, and also make some corrections and updates, because last month I put a little bit of Brendan Urie's music to play and talked about how much of an ally he's been to the community, but then I feel like as if it was just, you know, fascinating and kind of funny that he ended up coming out as pansexual. So I wanted to talk about that and make that correction. And my sister, who is a big fan of his, was really happy to hear the news. And so I pulled up a few articles, and I'll drop those into the comments, and I'll read a few of those. So over here from the Billboard, Panic at the Disco frontman Brendan Urie has come out as pansexual in an interview with Paper Magazine, published on Friday, July 6th. Quote, "I'm married to a woman, and I'm very much in love with her, but I'm not opposed to a man because to me, I like a person," Urie explains. "Yeah, I guess you could qualify me as pansexual because I really don't care." He adds, "I guess this is me coming out as pansexual." Urie, who has been married to Sarah Orzechowski for 5 years, shares that coming to terms with his sexuality was never weird for him as a young man. Previously identifying as straight and sexually fluid, the singer now seems to prefer a label more inclusive. Quote, "If a person is great, then a person is great," Urie says. "I just like good people. If your heart's in the right place, I'm definitely attracted to men. It's just people that I am attracted to." And when I read from People, it also says here that, "I'm married to a woman and I'm very much in love with her, but I'm not opposed to a man because to me, I like a person," and so on and so forth. And then he also said, let's see, what else was it saying here in the People magazine? In a 2017 interview, the alt rocker spoke to People about being open about his sexual fluidity. So this has been something that a lot of people have speculated, but I think it's really important to note that even though a lot of queer people may have suspected that Yuri was not straight, that, you know, just like us, everyone needs to come out on their own time when they feel like it. And I just wanted to get that update. I think it's great that now we have another queer celebrity to look up to, if that's who you like or listening to his music. So I'll probably play a few tunes after the program, or at least throughout the day, so that we can continue adding more queer color to our airwaves here at KPPP-FM. And then I wanted to, I suppose, kind of rant, I guess, about it all happened so fast in about a week or so. But Scarlett Johansson was asked again to play a role in a movie. And I was really upset about a year or two ago when she did Ghost in the Shell, where she plays an Asian woman, even though she's a white woman. And you can probably tell by the tone of my voice that I'm not happy with that, because I've had Asian friends discuss their feelings about that and how, frankly, it's quite disgusting that they would do that. And then this time, this one hit closer to me, where she decided that she was going to play a trans man in this movie with the same director who did Ghost in the Shell, in a movie called, let's see, what was it called? Pulling up the article, because I'm going to drop those in the comments as well. Rub and Tug. So, it all happened so fast, you guys. Guys and gals and people in between. What happened was, let's see, The Hollywood Reporter... No, not The Hollywood Reporter. Well, IndieWire covered it more thoroughly than anyone else. But people were upset, especially trans men. I was upset, and I'm a trans man. And here, I'm going to read this one article that came out first, July 3rd, 2018, by Zach Scharf. And here they write, Scarlett Johansson's latest film role was confirmed July 2nd by Deadline, when it was announced the actress would be reuniting with her Ghost in the Shell director, Rupert Sanders, for the crime biopic Rub and Tug. The story centers around the life of Dante Tex Gill, who became infamous in 1970s Pittsburgh for operating massage parlors that served as fronts for prostitution. Gill was ultimately arrested and served 7 years in prison for tax evasion. While the idea of Johansson playing a crime boss is exciting, many fans took to social media to express problems with the casting, since Dante Tex Gill was a transgender man. And you can see the embedded tweets in this article. Screen Crush dove deep into Gill's real life and confirmed the crime boss lived as a transmasculine person, pointing to an old newspaper article that described Gill as, quote, the woman who prefers to be known as a man. Johansson is a cisgender actress, which is a reason for casting backlash. Bustle reached out to Johansson for a comment about casting backlash and got the following response from her representative. Tell them that they can be directed to Jeffrey Tambor, Jared Leto, and Felicity Huffman's representatives for comment. The representative said comment came directly from the actress herself. So, if Scar Jo is basically giving us, you know, the hand, which is probably the worst thing you can do to the queer community, I decided to take a look at who these other actors were. Some of them were familiar because, guess what? These are all cisgender actors playing trans characters. And so I read through this article from The Hollywood Reporter, 14 cisgender actors in transgender roles. And I only watched one of these films, and I only liked the story of one of them, but nonetheless, I still wish that trans actors got the roles that they deserved. And so, and it names all the people that Scarlett Johansson mentioned, which was just kind of like, such a backhanded, maybe not backhanded, but it puts across what she wanted us to know, which was she does not give a flip about what you think of her taking roles that don't belong to her and not giving opportunity to either Asian actors
or actresses or transgender actors or actresses. And so it was really put off for me that she would do that. And so, like, you know, I didn't support her before, and I still don't support her now, and she's kind of put on my my blacklist of things that I would not watch a movie of if she was in it, or I would skip her scenes, basically. And that's how much I would put my detest for her. So, and I want to talk about the reason why that's such a BS argument to people's complaints that, well, if we can't find an actor for this movie, then you can't have the movie because there's not enough popular Asian or trans actors or any other people of color actors. Well, the thing is, you have to think about, like, I'm trying to connect all of my thoughts here. I'm sorry. You have to think about the history of theater and how it started off with the minstrel show, and how all those actors were white and blackface, but they wouldn't hire any black people to play black roles. And on top of that, you continue with this continued minstrel show of white people or people or cisgendered people, straight people, taking on roles of other marginalized groups. And so, you know, the minstrel show goes on here in the United States, among other places that continue to perpetuate that, instead of giving the due diligence and giving those roles to people that need it and that want it, so that we can become the great A-list actors that they're looking for. But you have to make them. You can't just, you know, we can't find anybody. Look for those potential people, and then they could become the diamonds that you're looking for. So that, you know, it just ticks me off. I want to use another word, but I'm going to go with ticks me off. This article from the IndieWire goes on. Johansson's statements refers to three cisgender actors who all earned rave reviews and accolades for playing transgender women in film or television. Jeffrey Tambor won an Emmy for his lead role on Amazon's comedy series Transparent, while Jared Leto won an Oscar for Dallas Buyers Club, and Felicity Huffman earned an Oscar nomination for Transamerica. Johansson's defense of the casting implies hiring cisgender actors in transgender roles is not an issue, especially since cisgender actors have long been rewarded for being cast in transgender roles. As numerous social media users observed, casting Johansson as Dante Tex Gill deprives a transgender actor the opportunity to play a character who matches his gender on screen, which is already rare to begin with in Hollywood. Quote, rub and tug isn't the first Johansson standards are coming under fire for problematic casting. The duo's Ghost in the Shell became synonymous with the Hollywood's whitewashing problem, with Johansson was cast in the lead role of a Japanese manga adaptation. Before taking rub and tug, Johansson will finish production on Taika Waititi's Jojo Rabbit. The actress can be seen as Black Widow in the next Summer Avengers sequel. IndieWire has reached out to Johansson for further comment. And so there's all these tweets here. I'm going to go through them. First, the Japanese. Now, Scarlett Johansson is taking out the trans community with her new film, Rub and Tug. I can't wait until her Rosa Parks films comes out. Good joke. And then we have other people getting really upset. What the F? Stop putting cis people in trans roles repeatedly. And they should stop. Here's another tweet. These mofos both partnered up for GITS, Ghost in the Shell, the same movie where ScarJo was cosplaying a effing Japanese woman, so it's fitting they team up to have her cosplay a trans person. If the heifer could effing act, she wouldn't need those constant controversies. Oh, damn. Here we go. And then, a cursory glance at Tex Gill's history shows he wasn't a crossdresser. He was transgender. These are not the same thing. And it's true, it's not the same thing. Do people who cross-dress eventually become transgender? Sometimes. And that's usually when you're exploring your gender expression. But not always, and they should not be considered the same thing at all. Because you can't be making assumptions about people and what they're doing and what they're not doing. And then, following that, the IndieWire updated, eventually, thank God, here's the second article. Transgender representation in Hollywood scored a huge victory last week, and this was posted July 17, 2018, so a little bit older now because I'm recording this later. when Scarlett Johansson stepped down from Rub and Tug, in which she was set to play a trans man, but it would just be just as bad if the project disappeared entirely. So she stepped down. She's done. Cool. Get out. Do not do this stuff again. So it goes on, naysayers are quick to point out that there are no trans actors famous enough to carry a movie the way Johansson can. It's like, don't give us that answer. Anyway, but Rub and Tug has a chance to reverse that narrative. The film is now high profile regardless of who is in the role. The casting controversy provided far more publicity than Johansson's name. If the film fizzles out, it would support the notion that trans movies can only get made with the A-lister attached. Rub and Tug needs to happen now more than ever to prove trans movies don't need cis actors to stars to sell tickets. Rub and Tug is now the movie that Scarlett Johansson dropped out of, just as All the Money in the World became the movie where they reshot all of Kevin Spacey's scenes. Following allegations of sexual misconduct against Spacey last fall, Ridley Scott recast the role of J. Paul Getty with Christopher Plummer. Similarly, when Ed Skrein dropped out of Lionsgate's forthcoming Hellboy reboot after whitewashing criticism, Daniel Dae Kim was tapped for the role. In both cases, the response to the controversy made the project and the producers look better while also picking up free publicity. Wow, it's like being less racist and being less transphobic helps you do better. Amazing. Makes you more beautiful. Who'da thunk? There is now a heightened awareness around this movie that eliminates the fear that an unknown trans actor would not be able to sell tickets. Trans actors experience a catch-22. There isn't enough trans actors famous enough to headline a movie, and there never will be if cis people keep taking their parts. Whoever lands a part in Rub and Tug could become a bona fide movie star. Johansson's production company, These Pictures, was set to produce, along with Joel Silver's Silver Pictures, which most recently produced Superfly. Now, Rub and Tug could be the first major studio film about a transgender person, yet another reason it would be a shame if it got scrapped. Rub and Tug tells the story of Dante Tix Gill, a transgender man who ran a string of massage parlors as front sex work for 1970s Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania. Without reading the script, it's impossible to know how screenwriter Gary Spinelli, American Made, handled Gill's story. The producers may have been wrong to cast Johansson, but they got one thing right. Dante Tix Gill had one hell of an interesting life. From the few accounts we have, Gill was quite a character. He fought scrappily for a piece of a dangerous Pittsburgh crime world, escaping letter bombs and once evading arrest by throwing a birthday cake at an undercover cop during a raid. Wearing suits and going by Mr. Gill, long before there was a trans rights movement, he was a pioneer. He was described by his lawyer as very complex, very tough, and heralded by the Pittsburgh press for having an eye for fashion like no one since Michael Jackson. While there is so much more to trans people than their gender, it's clear that Gill's gender nonconformity makes the story unique. For producers to tell it without consulting or casting any trans people would only lead to harm and mistakes, as we've already seen. But with trans man in the role and a trans director, there's no reason Rub and Tug can't rise from the ashes. What's more, if Rub and Tug did somehow right the ship, it would be one of the most impressive comebacks since Rocky's. After a misstep of response, Johansson stepped down from the project a little over a week after the initial announcement. Quote, in light of recent ethical questions raised during my casting as Dante Tix Gill, I have decided to respectfully withdraw my participation in the project. Johansson told Out Magazine, our cultural understanding of transgender people continues to advance, and I have learned a lot from the community since making my first statement about casting and realized it was insensitive. Damn right it was. Don't do that again. If Johansson can learn from her mistakes, so can the other producers of Rub and Tug. Here's my advice. Hire a trans man or a gender nonconforming person to play Dante Tix Gill. Someone who has walked the walk, someone who can fully inhabit the world with the wisdom of their lived experience. Hire a trans director, hire a trans script consultant, hire trans producers, consultants, and crew. Prove, like Johansson did, that you can listen, learn, and change. You will be rewarded. Silver Pictures did not immediately respond to IndieWire's request for comment. So, that's that article by Jude Dry. Thank you, Jude. And, I have to agree. And I think, like, we should definitely encourage for more stories outside of the common white, cisgender, able-bodied, stuff. And so, hopefully, that turns into something. Next, I wanted to connect the need for representation to children's targeted media, specifically animation, which is something I have a niche interest in, especially if the show reaches a wider audience beyond its target. In the future, this is where I want to take my show, Finding Me, since art and animation are my biggest passions, and the representation of queer characters for kids to look up to and feel comfortable in their skin, or change the drapes of their, or paint the walls of their house, something different, as the metaphor might go, it might be good for it. When I was a kid, finding myself in characters helped me slowly realize who I was when I reconsider who I was going to become, because I only had one perspective to view, mostly in the area of fandom culture, and all I had was the cisgendered heteronormative stories. So let's start with Steven Universe. I may or may not have mentioned it in the past in reference to it, but I'll give you a bit of a summary of what this show is about, and that I personally recommend in the area of queer representation. Steven Universe is a Cartoon Network American animated series that began airing in May of 2013. It's about the Crystal Gems, which are a team of magical beings who are self-appointed guardians of the universe. Half-human, half-gem hero Steven is the little brother of the group. The goofball is learning to save the world using magical powers that come from his belly button, and he goes on magical adventures with the rest of the Crystal Gems, even though he's not as powerful or smart as fellow group members Garnet, Amethyst, and Pearl. Despite his shortcomings, Steven usually finds a surprising way to save the day. In the series, you learn about the gems, their powers, and what being guardians entails, as well as Steven's silly side adventures. I say that for kids, it's a great show that has lots of characters all the time, and lots of filler episodes, and pulls in an older audience with its plot, and has a good push and pull that lets you have breaks in between, both for the earth-shattering plot points and revealing parts of the story. Recently, they had two characters, Ruby and Sapphire, have an anime queer wedding on screen, and I adore the way they did it. Ruby, whenever she appears in the show, is often shown in what we might consider a masculine clothing style, a bit of a butch look, while Sapphire we often see in dresses. Now keep in mind that in other countries, this relationship has been censored. Now what the creators did and what they've been planning since the very beginning, decided to put Ruby in a dress and Sapphire in a tux, so that it would be unmistakable that this was a wedding between two non-binary lesbians. And the kicker was that immediately after the wedding scene was plot-relevant content, which meant that other countries could not only have the impossible difficulty of editing for heteronormative acceptability, but they could not omit the episode from the storyline, or else they would confuse their audience.
Mom was a diamond who invaded Earth, saw its beauty and its worth. Mom made an army and she fought herself. Did that even end up mattering when she faked her own shattering? Mom lived in hiding by the name of Rose, with the friends she'd made and the form she chose. Now all that's left of her exists in me, and I think that we can all agree that is a little bit upsetting. I'd rather think about a wedding. Let's think about cake. Let's think about flowers. Let's think about dressing up and dancing around for hours. There's an awful lot of awful things we could be thinking of, but for just one day, let's only think about love.
Okay, Sapphire. I gotta get dressed for a big day now, so no peeking. And no future vision either!
Okay.
Oh, Steven, I just wish I could have said something sooner about Rose and Pink.
We could think about lies that we told in the past.
They took it so hard.
We could think about hurt feelings and how long they can last.
How can we move on?
Or we could think about hope.
Hope?
You know I've been hoping.
About what?
That everything's better now, everything's out in the open. Bismuth, is that what you're wearing to the wedding?
It's the nicest thing I own.
Looking sharp. We could think about flowers. We could think about cake. We could think about wonderful promises we have the power to make. There's an awful lot of awful things we could be thinking of. But for just one day, let's only think about love.
Maybe I shouldn't have picked up roses. Might be a little controversial.
We could all rethink how we feel about Rose.
when it comes to Pink and the things that she did in the past, I suppose.
Yeah.
Or we could both feel better, cause we could think about how. We could think about us, and we could think about now.
Well, if we don't use these, we're gonna need something else.
No worries. Peridot's gathering more flowers right now. I'll go get her.
But for just one day, let's only think about.
Peridot?
What if Lapis was right? Sooner or later, the diamonds are going to come for the cluster. We're all gonna die here.
We could think about war. We could think about fighting. We could think about long-lost friends we wish we were inviting. We could think about the broken gems in the cluster at the planet's core. Or we could think about the bubble we made so that they can't be hurt any, they can't be hurt anymore. We could think about joy. We could think about pain. We could think about sunshine. We could think about rain. There's an awful lot of awful things we could be thinking of. But for just one day, let's only think about.
Just one day, let's only think about. Just one day, let's only think about.
Thanks, Miss Sugar. Currently, I'm looking forward to more Steven Universe, as it was confirmed that the animation crew are working on a Steven Universe movie, which I imagine will be absolutely stellar beyond their usual work, and looking at the animation for me is lovely, soft, and pastel eye candy. And recently, I've been holding back about talking about this for nearly 2 years as it comes to its close this year, because this animation project on Netflix has had executive producers promise LGBT representation, and it was a matter of if it would be allowed, as well as potential speculation of character relationships with others that are clear to the audience. This show is called Voltron Legendary Defender, based off of the older animation Voltron Go Lion. The summary is as follows. Teenagers transported from Earth become pilots for robotic lions to fight an intergalactic war. The Paladins of Voltron must learn to work as a team to assemble the robot Voltron and use his power to conquer the Galra Empire. Now, at first, I was seeing stuff on Tumblr and latched on to my favorite character, Keith, because I love a character that are emotional. I love characters that are emotional, quiet, have a strong sense of justice, and especially love when they seem to follow a knight in shining armor air about them. Then, at conventions, there was talk of LGBT representation and the desire to avoid queer baiting and not promise anything they weren't prepared to deliver on, and at that endpoint was to fight for it and see what the fight resulted in a win or loss. To clarify, if you don't know what queer baiting is the practice to hint at, but then not fully depict, a same-sex relationship romantically between characters in a work of fiction, mainly in film or television. The concept arose in and has been popularized through internet discussions among the fandoms of popular film and television series. Sources confirm that we fans have won on the LGBT representation for the series' beloved main character, not a side character, Takashi Shiro Shirogane. This disabled, PTSD-ridden, buff Asian man is voiced by Josh Keaton and is a former paladin of the Black Lion. His sexuality reveal was supposed to be in Season 2, Episode 1, Across the Universe, but it was pushed to the back burner to Season 7, Episode 1, instead. But keeping this in mind, this information confirms that Shiro has an ex-boyfriend. And while people are free to play with the idea that Shiro is attracted to men and explore the sexuality in a more fluid manner, a few of the people who work on this show have used gay less as an umbrella term and more as a specific term to describe this character's sexuality, but mostly it should be respected that Shiro is a man who loves men, or MLM for shorthand. Here's Bex Taylor Klaus, voice actor for Pidge, on her fight for representation in Voltron.
Hello everyone, I am at San Diego Comic Con back with, oh my gosh, Bex Taylor. I never can say Klaus. I know how to say it, but I never know if it's like the emphasis is on like ow or like aw.
Klaus like mouse or house.
Okay, so Adrian gave me wrong information. He said like Santa Claus. I'm like, oh, okay.
He still doesn't know how to say my name?
This was when I first met you like 4 years ago though, so maybe that's why.
I hope it's changed since then.
No,
Klaus.
I'm sure it has. So how are you? It's been, 4 years, and honestly, shout out to you for making time to do this. I know Comic-Con is crazy.
It is.
It really is.
But it's the most wonderful time of the year.
It is. It really is. It's such a fun time. So I guess we're about halfway through because it's Friday now. We have two more days left. Some very exciting things happened for you today at the panel. Can you elaborate on that for people who haven't seen your post from like a couple minutes ago? You know, the late fans.
All right. So I am part of an animated show called Voltron that is on Netflix. And we had our panel this morning where we announced, I'll be right back.
Okay.
I'll leave you in suspense. I hope I've left you trembling in anticipation of what I was about to say. We had our panel this morning. We announced that season 7 is coming on August 10th. 13 episodes are going to be released. And we got to watch the first episode of season 7, and everyone who was there got to meet Shiro's boyfriend. So our head of Voltron is canonically gay.
Honestly, I think it's so important to have LGBT characters, you know, not only in the shows with like real people, so to speak, but like these animated shows, because it's something that a lot of people don't necessarily think about. It's like, you know, they're not real people, so it's kind of, I feel like it's not given as much attention. So
cartoons carry so much weight, and so many people watch. Mm-hmm. People from varying backgrounds, people of varying ages. Just there's an endless appeal of cartoons.
There really is. And what I love seeing is a lot of times, you know, it's the kids who like think it's the most fascinating when a character comes out as LGBT, because that's such a mainstream phenomenon, for lack of a better word, right now. And I think that, you know, a few years ago, parents would have, you know, said, no, you can't watch that show. You can't watch Voltron. It has, you know, bad content or something. And now I feel like that's...
And now instead of the reaction being, oh, God, he's gay, the reaction, oh, God, he's gay.
Exactly.
Yes.
Exactly. You know? Exactly. Were there any crazy reactions in the audience that you could point out? I know it's hard to see everyone, but...
So there was this person in the second row. As soon as he was, I turned to watch the audience because I knew it was coming. Mm. So as soon as it dawned on him what he was watching, he just goes, and like stayed like that for like 5 minutes. It was amazing.
Oh, I love that. That's great. Congratulations on, you know, not only being able to be a part of this show, but having such a positive reaction from the fans here in real time at Comic-Con.
And
it's incredible.
To see the trailer of what's to come in season 7, and the same person, as he saw a black pilot in an upcoming episode, and he nearly fell out of his seat gasping. Like, representation is so important.
It really is.
It's so important.
It's so important. And you guys are clearly hitting off the checklist. You've got LGBT characters now. You have marginalized races, so that's absolutely incredible. That reminds me of Riverdale. They literally, I feel like they actually have a checklist. LGBT character, bisexual character, person
it's
of color.
It's just, we're trying to tell a story where everybody can see themselves and can relate to our characters, because people like this exist. Mm-hmm. We're here and we want to see ourselves.
Definitely.
Here's Josh Hamilton, writer, and Rhys Darby.
So Lord and Joaquin were talking to us about how their originally plans, that originally they wanted Shiro to die in like the third or fourth season, and then that was changed, and they were originally going to reveal Shiro's partner in the second season. So can you talk a little bit about that process, about shifting things from season 2 to season 7? And...
Yeah, I mean, some things are just out of your hands, and there's lots of different elements to it, but Shiro, yeah, he was going to die. I mean, that's the way we had it originally, and as far as, you know, him being gay, we always pictured him that way, and so it's kind of fun. In one scenario, it took longer to reveal, you know, to get to the reveal that we wanted, but that's okay, because I think it hits the heart, you know, where it's, there's this like desire for it, you know, from the audience, and
the longer the stretch of the reveal, the better. That's what we found.
Yeah, exactly. But you know, sometimes it drives people crazy.
Just take them to the age of craziness.
I don't think you want to.
They went over. Yeah. And the Shiro death, you know, as unfortunate as it was, I think you guys discovered a lot of fun things about it. and we wouldn't have had this episode. We discovered things about Keith as well because she was old. And so he, you know, he's a character that influences everybody in all sorts of different ways. And so, you know, as cool as it would have been, and dramatic as it would have been for him to die at the end of the first season, it's pretty awesome that he gets to live. And I think maybe.
And finally, the executive producers, Lauren Montgomery and Joaquin Dos Santos.
Can you talk a little bit about the announcement at the panel, obviously, of Shiro having a significant other of Adam? And I mean, I'm looking at my personal Twitter, and I have, you know, my queer friends who are like, we're in tears over it. I mean, this means so much to them. Can you talk about kind of the process of making that?
I think it was always, like, for me, it was exciting, the idea of having this character who had been so much to so many people, and none of that was kind of based on his sexual orientation, and then to feel that he is a gay man, and that in no way changes his relationships with his people, anything that he's done, and, you know, sometimes, I think, it's amazing to have the stories where the character is finding themselves, but then it's also incredibly important to have the stories where this character is fully formed, and he's a gay man, and he's doing amazing things, and he's flawed, and he has, you know, his own problems. So that was, to me, was the why I love the idea of having Shiro being our representation.
And I think also just the way the story was handled, you don't, it's not a big, like, oh, aha moment. You know, it is for the audience because maybe a huge portion of the audience has been waiting to hear. But I think he's in the middle of a relationship. He's in the middle of working it out. He's in the middle of choosing his job over his relationship. He's got very real-world kind of problems that you just come in the middle of. But on a completely superficial level, we were incredibly excited. And the reaction was amazing. And I mean, you know, we all got emotional. You can't hear us talking when we're backing away from the mic, but we were just like, guys, we want to cry. So, yeah, it was really important to everybody.
Regardless if you watch the show, queer folks will be able to see the signs that suggest Shiro's sexuality in comparison to another character, Hunk or Lance, or who are very much attracted to women, and women identifying aliens, while Shiro voices no attraction to women, but he does seem to have a soft spot for his best friend, Keith. And these two have always had their soft, intimate moments. We'll just have to see if this bromance evolves into romance, but otherwise, I highly recommend watching both Steven Universe on Cartoon Network, if you've never heard of it, thought about it, along with Voltron Legendary Defender on Netflix, for one of the coolest gay men in sci-fi.
Hello, I'm Shiro. I fly the Black Lion. The other paladins keep reminding me that I'm the only one who hasn't shared their memories yet. These days, feels like I can't trust my memories. What I do know is that these heroic men and women, and Lance, wouldn't be on this dangerous mission if it weren't for me.
Hey!
Shiro?
Nope, no, you, nope, no, 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 you don't. I'm saving Shiro.
Guys, is that a clip up ahead?
Oh, no, 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 oh, no, 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 no,
yep.
But not one of them has ever run away from the fight. They've run towards it. Were they the most conventional of soldiers? Hunk, what are you doing?
What do you mean?
You're supposed to be the leg, over there.
What? No, 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 no. I'm pretty sure that when we did it last time, I was the head, right?
You yelled, I'm a leg!
Yeah, I was yelling a lot of things.
Shiro's the head.
All the time?
Let's just try it my way for now.
Okay, but next time I call head.
But I guess I'm not the most conventional leader either.
Shiro, you're on!
I will save the princess, even if it means taking on the Galra Empire with my bare hand.
So what's the plan? We go in there and just
pow, pow, pow!
And free the prisoners?
What was that noise?
Laser guns.
No, Lance, I think you mean pow, pow, pow!
Pow!
That sounds like fireworks.
Technically, they're more like ba-choo, ba-choo, ba-choo.
Okay, enough with the bad sound effects. Besides, it's more like blam, blam, blam.
Each one of them would do anything they could for each other. I guess that makes them a family.
Dad used to tell me how close he was with his crew members. They were like family. Now I understand what he was talking about.
I can't be left out of this!
And if we're a family, I guess that makes me some kind of space uncle? The universe is counting on Voltron to win this war. And my team is counting on me. So I will do whatever it takes to make sure they get back to Earth safely. Whatever it takes.
I also want you to think about this for a month and answer this question. I'm thinking about reducing this program to roughly 10, 20, 30 minutes, with the content split over the month in 2 to 4 parts, in different sections, monthly throughout, just so that I can update with smaller snippets at my own pace. If you don't want me to shorten it, let me know. That's all I have for you today. Did you find yourself today while finding me? Feel free to send me a message. You can contact us at 701-566-0917, at Nemo Potatoes on Facebook, Twitter, or Instagram. Contact me through my contact on kppfm.com/finding-me on that tab, or email me at nemo@kppfm.com. If you'd like a sneak peek to the Building of Finding Me programs in the future, consider becoming a patron at my Patreon at patreon.com/anemonefish. Follow us on Facebook at 88.1 FM Fargo Moorhead, the People's Press Project, and Mexi-Can. Donations to Fargo Moorhead's newest low-power commercial-free radio station can be made at our website on kppfm.com/donate, and check out our underwriting opportunities at kppfm.com/underwriting-opportunities on how you can support the first queer radio program in the Red River Valley. Thanks for tuning in. See you next month on the first Wednesday here on Finding Me.